Lowe's early Black Friday deals are going fast. Don't miss up to 50% off select major appliances. Plus, up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. And with Christmas around the corner, you're going to need more string lights, right? Save $4 on GE LED 100-count string lights, now just $5.98. Lowe's, we help, you save. Valid through 12/3. Selection varies by location. Select locations only while supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today, we're looking at someone I think a lot of people feel they know really well, Brett Leroy Butt.
Yeah, definitely. For so many, he is that friendly face from Corner Gas, you know, that gentle, small-town Canadian humor personified.
Right, the guy behind the counter at the gas station in Dog River.
Yeah.
But when you dig into the sources, the picture gets, well, a lot more complex.
Exactly. That's what we're doing today. You've got this great biographical profile, and it shows this journey from, like, small-town Saskatchewan kid to this major award-winning creator.
And it's not just the Corner Gas guy.
Yeah.
He's an actor, comedian, screenwriter, and now a novelist, writing psychological thrillers.
Yeah. That's the really fascinating turn, isn't it? How do you go from nothing rhymes with Saskatchewan to, well, dark thrillers about comedians? That's the evolution we want to unpack.
Okay, so our mission is to track that arc.
Yeah.
From stand-up to creating maybe the most beloved Canadian sitcom ever, Corner Gas ran 2004 to 2009, let's remember.
Right.
To now writing fiction in a totally different genre. How did his early life set him up for that first huge success? And what do these later moves tell us?
It's about creative drive, I think.
Yeah.
And maybe pushing against the very image that made him famous.
All right, let's start at the beginning because you really can't separate Brett Butt from Saskatchewan. Born August 3rd, 1966 in Tisdale.
Yeah, Tisdale, northeast of Saskatoon. And that prairie upbringing, it's not just background, it's like the DNA of his most famous work. His parents were Irene and Herbert. He went to Tisdale Unit Composite School there.
That grounding seems so key. The humor often comes from just observing that specific sort of quiet prairie life.
Totally. But it wasn't a straight line to comedy. He actually tried to leave first.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Sources say he went off to Sheridan College in Ontario for a bit.
Trying the big city thing.
Seems like it. But it didn't stick. He came back home to Saskatchewan pretty quickly. Maybe it just wasn't the right time or the right fit for him then.
So back home.
Mm.
What then?
Pop.
Straight into comedy.
Not quite. This is where it gets interesting. Before the jokes, he was working a trade. He was a drywaller.
A drywaller? Seriously, that's unexpected physical work.
Right. Very different from writing jokes. But here's the kicker. While he was doing drywall, he had this side hustle. He actually co-founded a publishing company.
Wait, what? A publishing company?
Right.
While drywalling?
Yeah, called Windwolf Graphics, him and a friend. It really shows that creative spark was already there, you know? That need to make stuff.
What do they publish?
They put out a comic book called Existing Earth.
A comic book. Okay.
And get this, it wasn't just some small local thing that disappeared. It actually got nominated for an Eagle Award.
Whoa, hold on. An Eagle Award? Those are pretty respected international comic awards, right?
Exactly. So right out of the gate, his first big creative venture, while he's still working this trade job, gets recognized internationally. That's pretty telling.
That's amazing. Did it take off?
Ah, well, that's the other side of the coin. The sources are clear. They only managed to publish two issues. Then they ran out of money.
Ouch. So, quick success, even quicker failure.
Pretty much. A harsh lesson, I imagine, in the realities of independent creating and, you know, the business side of things.
But what a lesson to learn early on.
Absolutely. I think you can draw a direct line from that experience, the creative talent getting noticed, but hitting that financial wall, to how he later set up Corner Gas.
How so?
Well, he learned he needed control. Not just creative control, but business control, too. That failure probably fueled the drive to eventually create his own production company, Prairie Pants, to make Corner Gas. He knew he had to build the whole thing himself, finance it, own it.
Right. He wasn't just the talent. He had to be the entrepreneur. The drywalling, maybe the discipline.
Yeah.
And the failed comic, the hard business lesson. It all kind of feeds into it.
Exactly. That resilience, that self-starter attitude, it's all there right from the beginning.
Okay, so the publishing dream fizzles out. Where does that drive go next?
Straight to the stage. Stand-up comedy. And we actually know exactly when and where it started.
Oh, yeah. Details.
February 1988. An amateur night at a comedy club in Saskatoon. That was the first time he ever performed stand-up.
And presumably, it clicked.
Must have. Because the very next year, 1989, he makes the big move.
Toronto.
Yep. The classic path for an ambitious Canadian comedian back then, started performing at Yuk Yup's.
Ah, Yuk Yup's, the institution.
Right, and the sources even give us that classic struggling artist detail, living in a Cabbage Town apartment with two other comics.
Oh, wow. You can just picture it, can't you? Three guys trying to make it, crammed into some apartment. That's the grind.
Totally. Late nights, honing the act, probably not much money, but that's where you build the chops, right? And find your voice.
And his voice was very specific, wasn't it? Tied right back to where he came from.
Absolutely. He wasn't doing edgy urban stuff. The sources call his style prairie-oriented funny or folksy songs. He leaned right into that Saskatchewan identity he'd initially tried to leave behind.
So embracing the roots.
Yeah.
Smart.
Very smart. It made him stand out. And we even know some of the specific songs from that era.
Yeah.
Nothing rhymes with Saskatchewan.
Huh. Perfect. That's basically his brand right there, isn't it?
Pretty much. And another one called Hairy Legs. Just observational, relatable, slightly quirky stuff. Taking the specific, like, the supposed boringness of Saskatchewan and making it funny for everyone.
That ability to make the local feel universal, that's gold in comedy.
And it worked. He got tons of exposure for a Canadian comic back then.
Where was he showing up?
All over Canadian TV, CTV, CBC Television, the Comedy Network, plus CBC Radio, like on definitely not the opera.
Okay, solid Canadian presence.
But it went further. He got play on A&E in the U.S. and even down in Australia on the Special Broadcasting Service.
Wow, so he was building an international profile even then just with his stand-up.
Yeah, he was definitely getting noticed, which naturally starts opening doors to other things. Like acting.
The move to the screen. Was that part of the plan, you think?
Hard to say if it was the plan, but it was definitely the next step. And those early roles, they were like his on-the-job training for what came later.
So what kind of roles are we talking? Small stuff.
Oh, yeah. Tiny stuff at first. Like looking at his credits from the early 90s. Applicant #1 in Maniac Mansion in 92.
Applicant #1. Glamorous.
Ha, right. Barfly and the Kids in the Hall, same year. Baker in Kung Fu. The legend continues in 93, just getting experience on set, seeing how TV worked.
Learning the mechanics.
Exactly. But then you see a slightly more notable one in 98. He played a coroner in an episode of The X-Files.
Okay, The X-Files.
Yeah.
That's a step up. That show was huge. Shot in Vancouver, right?
Yeah. So getting booked on a big American show like that, even for a small part, shows he was, you know, becoming a reliable professional actor.
But he wasn't just acting, was he? Wasn't he writing too?
Crucial point, yes. He was already working behind the scenes as a writer. He wrote for a series called Get Serious, Seven Deadly Sins back in 95, 96. Got 5 writing credits there.
Ah, so he was building both skill sets, performing on camera and writing for the screen.
Precisely. Stand up first, gets the exposure, takes the small acting gigs to learn production, gets into a writer's room to learn structure. It's like he was assembling all the pieces he'd need.
To eventually launch his own thing.
Exactly. By 2003, he wasn't just a funny stand-up. He was ready.
And that own thing was, of course, Corner Gas. The big one.
The big one. This is where everything converges, right? The prairie roots, the folksy humor, the writing chops, that entrepreneurial drive we saw with the comic book, it all comes together.
He co-created it in 2003 through his own company, Prairie Pants. That ownership piece again?
Super important. Gave him massive control. And of course, set in fictional Dog River, Saskatchewan, right back home.
It launched on CTV in 2004 and just took off. It became this instant phenomenon.
Unprecedented, really, for a Canadian sitcom. It wasn't trying to be American. It was quiet, witty, character-driven, so specifically Canadian in its vibe.
And it ran for 6 seasons, right? Until 2009.
Yes. But here's maybe the most interesting part of the Corner Gas story, according to the sources.
What's that?
They chose to end it. But in his company, Prairie Pants, made the call to wrap it up after season 6.
While it was still huge.
Exactly. It wasn't canceled. Ratings were still great. It was still culturally relevant. They decided to end it on their own terms at the peak of its popularity.
Wow. That takes some serious guts. Most shows hang on way too long.
Right. But doing that cemented its legacy. It ensured it went out strong, never got stale. It was a power move, really. Shows a commitment to the quality of the story over just milking the success.
And that success really catapulted him into a different stratosphere, didn't it? He became more than just the guy from the show.
Oh, absolutely. Especially around the mid-2000s. Like, let's look at 2005 specifically. That year really shows his status.
What happened in 2005?
Well, first, he hosted the Juno Awards.
Okay, big deal in Canada, the Music Awards.
Huge deal. Needs real comedic skill to handle that live broadcast. But even bigger, he hosted a Royal Command Performance Gala.
For the Queen.
For the Queen. Queen Elizabeth II and Prince Philip. It was held in Saskatoon to celebrate Saskatchewan's centennial.
No way. Full circle, eh?
Mm.
The kid from Tisdale, back home, performing for royalty, celebrating the province that made him famous.
Isn't it wild? And the sources have this great little anecdote about it. He didn't, like, tone down his act for the queen.
What'd he do?
He performed Nothing Rhymes with Saskatchewan.
He sang that for the queen.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yep. And apparently he was trading jokes with Leslie Nielsen at the same event.
Leslie Nielsen. Wow. From Naked Gun.
Yeah.
Hanging out with Brent Butt.
Yeah. It just shows how his specific folksy style had gained this massive respect, even among comedy legends. It wasn't just niche anymore.
That validation must have felt incredible. And it wasn't just anecdotal, right? He started getting major awards, too.
Serious industry recognition. The big one came in 2008 at the Banff World Television Festival. He won the Comedy Network Sir Peter Ustinov Award.
Okay, what's the significance of that one?
It's a huge honor. It's for an outstanding body of work in TV comedy. And look who won it before him.
Oh.
John Cleese, Bob Newhart, John Candy, Eugene Levy.
Wow. That's a legendary company. Seriously heavy hitters.
Right. So being put in that group, while Corner Gas was still wrapping up its run, it showed the show was seen as more than just popular. It was seen as important as quality television comedy on an international level.
It cemented Corner Gas as a classic. Did he win other stuff too?
Oh, yeah. Multiple Canadian Comedy Awards.
Yeah.
He won Best Male Stand-Up back in 2001, showing he still had those live chops.
Mm-hmm.
Then for Corner Gas, he won Best Male TV Performance twice in 2004 and 2005, and crucially, Best Writing for the TV series in 2004.
So winning for performing, winning for writing, winning for his overall contribution with the Ustinov Award, he was firing on all cylinders.
Totally. Actor, writer, creator, producer, doing it all at an award-winning level. That multi-hyphenate thing was really paying off.
Okay, so Corner Gas wraps in 2009, ends on a high note. The big question always is, what do you do next? How do you follow up something that massive?
Well, he didn't wait around. He leveraged that success in his relationship with CTV pretty much immediately.
What was the next project?
A new sitcom called Hiccups. It ran for two seasons, 2010 to 2011.
Hiccups.
Okay.
Was he starring in it?
He was, but more than that, this project really shows him doubling down on being the creator. He created Hiccups, he wrote it, he executive produced it, and he directed four episodes himself.
Adding director to the list now, too.
Yeah.
Really taking full control.
Seems like it. And the casting is interesting, too. It starred Nancy Robertson.
Wanda from Corner Gas.
Yeah.
Who's also his wife, right? They got married in 2005.
That's right. So continuing that professional partnership, in Hiccups, she played a children's author with pretty severe anger management issues.
Okay, that sounds different from Wanda.
Very different, but played her life coach, Stan Durko. So a totally different dynamic and tone compared to Corner Gas. More edge, maybe?
Interesting. Exploring different territory, even if it didn't become another Corner Gas-level hit, it shows they weren't afraid to try something new together.
Definitely. And around the same time, he wasn't letting his stand-up slide either. He put out a one-hour comedy special in July 2010.
The Brent Butt comedy special.
That's the one, on the Comedy Network. And look at the guests he pulled for that.
Who'd he get?
Seth Rogen. Dave Foley. Jelly Black.
Wow. Seth Rogen and Dave Foley, that's some serious comedy cred.
Yeah.
And Jelly Black, major music star.
Yeah, it really speaks to the respect he commanded in the industry by then. He could attract top-tier talent for his own special.
But even with these new projects, people still wanted Corner Gas, didn't they? That world was just too beloved to leave behind completely.
Impossible to ignore that demand. So he did return to Dog River twice, actually, which was pretty smart thinking about managing that valuable IP.
First was the movie, right?
Yep, Corner Gas. The movie came out in 2014. He co-wrote it, co-executive produced it, and starred as Brent LeRoy again. It was like this big reunion event.
I remember that. It got a lot of buzz.
It did. And they packed it with cameos, Canadian TV folks, but also serious actors like Graham Greene.
Academy Award nominee Graham Greene.
The same. And Will Sasso, too. It showed the brand could work as a movie, bring people out.
And then came the cartoon.
Right. Corner Gas Animated. That launched in April 2018 and ran until 2021.
Okay. Why animation?
Well, think about it. It keeps the characters and the world alive, but it's less demanding on the original actors. Plus, you can do more absurd cartoony gags that wouldn't work in live action. It was a clever way to extend the brand's life.
And he was still heavily involved.
Oh, yeah. Creator, co-writer, co-executive producer, still steering the ship, just in a different format.
Okay, so managing the legacy, keeping the stand-up going, trying new sitcoms. But that brings us to the latest thing, the real curveball.
The novel. Huge. Published in 2023.
And it's not a collection of funny stories about Saskatchewan life.
Not even close. It's a psychological thriller.
I mean, wow. From the guy who gave us the gentle humor of Dog River, a psychological thriller, that's a pivot.
A massive pivot. You immediately ask, why? Why go there?
Does it connect at all to his past work?
It does, actually, in a really interesting way. The setting connects. Huge is set among touring stand-up comedians.
Ah, okay. So he's writing what he knows, but through a completely different lens.
Exactly. He's taking all that experience, the decades on the road, the clubs, the competition, maybe the loneliness, the stuff we glimpsed from that Cabbage Town apartment era, and exploring the darker side of it, the pressure, the backstabbing, the psychology of being a performer.
So using the raw material of his own life, but instead of turning it into folksy jokes, turning it into suspense and, well, thrills.
Yeah. It's like looking at the underbelly of the world that made him famous. The contrast between Corner Gas and a thriller about the potential darkness of comedy, it's stark.
It really is. It feels like a deliberate choice to say, I'm more than just the nice guy from the prairies.
I think so. It's him exercising creative freedom. He built this huge success on comfort and warmth, and now he's earned the right, perhaps, to explore something unsettling, something complex, using the world he knows best. He shows incredible range. Hashtag tag outro.
So when we step back and look at this whole journey based on our sources, you really see these clear phases, don't you?
Yeah, three distinct stages, but all connected. First, there's the foundation phase, the prairie kid, the drywaller, the comic book publisher who fails but learns.
Right. Building the stand-up persona, getting those early TV credits, finding that folksy voice, the hustle years.
Exactly. Then phase two is the peak. Corner Gas. Creating, writing, starring in this massive cultural hit. Winning the big awards like the Ustinov, becoming a national figure, mastering television.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're in phase three. The diversification phase, smartly managing the Corner Gas legacy with the movie and animation.
But also branching out, hiccups, the specials, and then the big leap.
The big leap into novelist, writing thrillers with Huge, and the thread connecting it all is that constant drive to be the creator, the writer, the producer. He's always been in control of the material.
It really makes you think about what success means for a creative person, doesn't it? He reached the absolute summit with Corner Gas. He created something universally loved, comfortable, safe.
He could have just ridden that way forever, right? Toured Corner Gas, nostalgia shows, done appearances, stayed firmly in that brand.
But he didn't. He chose to write a psychological thriller about the potentially dark side of the very industry that launched him. He challenged himself and challenged his audience's expectations.
It poses that question, you know? When you achieve that peak success, your own personal Corner Gas, what do you do?
Do you stick with the formula because it works, because it's comfortable?
Mm.
Or do you use the freedom that success gives you to take risks, to explore something completely different, maybe something darker or more complex, just to show yourself and everyone else what else you can do?
It's a fascinating question about creative ambition versus comfort, something for you, the listener, to maybe chew on. What does that kind of artistic freedom really look like?